If you've ever spent any time playing Tetris, I bet you recognize that music. And if you spent any time playing Tetris, you've probably spent a lot of time playing it, because there's something weirdly addictive about it. Weird because it's just so simple. You know, these little geometric shapes keep drifting down while you try to fit them into place. But play Tetris long enough, and you'll see those Technicolor shapes everywhere, even in your dreams.
You can get into this meditative state while playing Tetris that you can't really do with other games. I spoke to a neuroscientist about Tetris, and he explained to me, like, what it does is when the first piece comes down, it creates a task in your brain. And when you place the piece, it satisfies that task. So it's a real feeling of satisfaction in your brain. And then once that piece gets played, the landscape completely changes. So you have a new problem, and then you get a new piece, and it creates a new task in your brain that you can satisfy. And it puts your brain into a place where you can think about things without feeling like you have to do something else.
Box Brown has spent a lot of time playing and thinking about Tetris. Now he's written and illustrated a graphic history of the world's most popular video game, which, who knew, turns out to have a fascinating backstory. Tetris was invented in 1984 in Soviet Russia by a Cold War computer scientist named Alexei Pajitnov. And he made it in his spare time, just for fun.
Okay, so Alexei worked in the computer center at Moscow, and he originally got into puzzles because he broke his leg. And he had this huge cast. He was in the hospital for like 5 days, and he was going to be off his feet for a long time. And friends would bring him puzzles to play. And Tetris basically existed as a game called Pentominoes, which was you would take pieces that had five blocks. Tetris was based on a four-block piece, but this had five. That's why it's called Pentominoes. And, you know, you would just place them on a board like you would a regular puzzle, but if you didn't put them exactly the right way, you'd have pieces left over. And, like, that's how you would play.
So these were, like, little wooden pieces that you'd have to try to fit together.
So okay. Alexei was playing that and thinking about it. And at the time, you know, creating something on a computer at the time was mostly about modeling it.
Like, how do I get this to look on a screen?
Right. So, but it's a unique version of Pentominoes because he was picturing the Pentominoes falling from the sky. And you'd have to rearrange them as they landed, and you have only a certain amount of time to manipulate them, and you have to put them in the right spot. It's like a timed version of Pentominoes.
So he just invented this just for fun to see if he could, and then he does what, of course, somebody like this would do. He just starts giving it to his friends.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And then you write that within 2 weeks, everybody in Moscow was playing it. It somehow just spread. And this is, you know, remember, before the internet.
Right. So people, it was shareware. You know, people would put it on a little disc and hand it out to their friends, whoever. As soon as somebody would play it, imagine playing Tetris for the first time and you'd never even heard of this game, and you sit down and play it for hours, you'd be like, oh my God, this is amazing. Everybody must try this. There's a part in the book where the manager of a business gets a copy of Tetris, and he gave his whole staff copies of Tetris. And like 2 days later, he had to destroy every copy because nobody was getting any work done.
So how did Tetris go from that to being this multi-million, billion-dollar game?
Okay, so Alexei's boss at the Computer Science Center shared it with a colleague who worked at a Hungarian science center. Hungary, at the time, was already getting involved in capitalist ideas. So this guy, Robert Stein, a British investor, he came and he saw Tetris. It wasn't for sale, but they just happened to have it in the background there. And he started playing it and he couldn't put it down. And
so he had the magical Tetris effect.
Right. So he thought to himself, you know, I'm terrible at video games. And this is the guy who owns the company. He was like, I'm terrible at video games, but I can't stop playing this. So there must be something to it. So he contacted Alexei directly and was trying to gain the rights. In that exchange, Robert Stein believed that he had bought the rights to Tetris. Alexei had believed that he had said, okay, let's talk.
Uh-oh.
So at that point, Stein just goes all out, starts selling the rights to Tetris. A British version comes out for the computer. An American version comes out for the computer. They win awards. They're selling a lot.
So at some point, does somebody say, hey, Alexei, that game you invented is for sale all over the world.
Yeah. So, you know, the Japanese had bought the rights to Tetris and made a Nintendo version, and they wanted to make the handheld version. They had invented the Game Boy, and they thought Tetris would be perfect for this. And it was in the exploring of making sure that they had the handheld rights to Tetris that the Russians really found out that they had something going here.
I spell out exactly what happened, because this one guy,
Hank Rogers,
he winds up essentially crashing this government
agency. Yeah, so Hank Rogers was now Bulletproof Software and representing Nintendo. So he has a lot on the line. But Hank Rogers needs to get these rights, the handheld rights to Tetris. So he just goes straight to Moscow, went to ILORG, was the name of the government agency that owned Tetris.
This is Cold War.
Right.
Soviet Union, which is,
it
Russia.
It took him forever even to find the building, and his translator wouldn't even go in with him because she didn't know what even could happen just for going into a government building without an appointment or anything like that. And Gorbachev and government higher-ups are now paying attention to Belikov, the guy who's doing these negotiations, and he could have been punished in a way.
In fact, didn't the KGB come around and sort of say, you better get this right?
Right. So these are high, high stakes for him, too.
Huh. Now, while all of this was happening, you mentioned Gorbachev. So around this time was like Ronald Reagan met Gorbachev for the first time. Was part of the mystique of Tetris that it came from Russia?
Yeah. At first, they didn't know how to sell it in America. What they ended up doing was making it seem like something sinister that escaped the Iron Curtain. And Reagan and Gorbachev had now started talking, and there was these closed-door meetings. So when they first brought Tetris to America, one of the things they did was they took out a huge ad in the newspaper, and it was like, well, what are they really doing behind these closed doors? And it was like two people that looked like Gorbachev and Reagan playing Tetris.
Oh, my gosh.
That was the ad.
Well, meanwhile, what about Alexei sitting back there in Moscow just going to his day job day after day? Did he see any profit on this?
Not for a long time. During the entire run with Nintendo, they sold 90 million copies of the Game Boy cartridge. You know, Alexei was not getting money from that because it would go to the government. So, you know, we think about this whole idea of him not making all this money as like the big tragedy of Tetris, right? The creator doesn't make any money. Now, he does now own the rights and has for the last 20 years. What happened was Hank Rogers, Hank who had gotten the rights to Tetris for Nintendo, had become friends with Alexei. And so Hank helped Alexei get the rights for Tetris for himself and for Hank. Now, then they formed the Tetris company and they moved to the US.
Hmm.
Alexei got a job at Microsoft making games. So he's probably doing fine. But the thing that I always say is that he gained something way more important than that. And that's that he found his medium. He's a game maker. He's an artist. That's what's really important.
It's so interesting because Tetris looks almost primitive today by comparison to the games that we have. And games have gotten so gorgeous.
Sure.
And, you know, and here's Tetris, this old-fashioned thing with these little multicolored blocks. And yet it sounds like you still think it's one of the best games ever made.
Yeah, I think of Tetris as like part of the canon of video games. And I don't think it's exaggerating to say that it is like the Mona Lisa of video games or, you know, the Statue of David. I mean, these are iconic canon things that led people to make other things. You know, it's part of the lineage of games. The other thing is that we tend to think that once a new system comes out or a new way of making graphics or whatever it is, we tend to look back at the old games as inferior. I don't think that's true, though. I mean,
Don't we think of them as classic?
Right. It would be like looking back at a painting and saying that's totally inferior because we've now invented photography. You know, yeah, that's, I think of it in that way as a classic thing. And if you picked it up today, you'd have just as much fun playing it as you did in 1989 or whatever.
That's Box Brown talking about his new graphic history book, Tetris, The Games People Play.